Hi, and welcome to Generation Goat number 18. I am E. Christopher Clark from GeekForce5.com, and with me, as always, is John Martin of Listen and SongsThatSavedYourLife.com.
Hey, Chris. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, you know, I just managed to do an intro without screwing it up.
Woohoo!
Have I blown people's minds yet?
That's it. We'll just stop the podcast right there.
Right there. I was really focused, you know.
Yeah, no, that was good. That was good. I can see you had the eye of the tiger.
Yes. The thrill of the fight.
That's right. Wow.
Rising up to the challenge of our rivals.
You know, I was in Philadelphia for the Modern Language Association conference, the big English conference, one year. And we went up to the Philadelphia Art Museum because, you know, there's free time. And on the top step, you know, because Rocky does his little running up the steps thing in his montage, They actually have bronzed Sylvester Stallone's feet. there's a little plaque in the middle of the stairs. And the dude has size 7 feet. Like, he has, like, average female-sized feet. And it was just kind of like, all right, Rocky can take me in a fight, but really?
I mean, you know, as disturbing as it is that Rocky has size 7 feet, think about the fact that Rambo has size 7 feet.
I know, right? Like, just any of them. Judge Dredd has size 7 feet. Well, actually, that I can kind of go with, you know, but
I don't know the dude from The Expendables, but I'd throw that out there. You know?
Yeah, it's just nuts, right? So
the Demolition Man has size 7 feet. Yeah,
I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense, but there it is.
I bet you Wesley Snipes was not intimidated by those size 7 feet.
No. No wonder everybody wanted to beat him up. I mean, Mr. T had a legitimate reason to pity that fool.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren. Yeah.
Nuts.
I don't know. Size 7. What size are your feet?
My feet are 12.
12? I think I'm a 9 wide.
Nice. You know, actually, it was a real problem. Mine are more like 11 and a half. But in Britain, they don't have half sizes.
Oh.
Like, they just don't. It's like the army. They're like, no, you're 11.
And we're strict here in Britain.
I don't know why. They just never caught on. So, yeah, for like 4 years, I had really uncomfortable feet whenever I went anywhere. But
too bad.
That's a really good topic for a podcast.
Well, you know, no topic remains unturned on Generation Goat. You know?
That's right. Up next, colonoscopy. So, actually, I was going to ask you, because in our last podcast, you mentioned you might be going to your high school reunion. Did you go?
I didn't.
Nah.
I was in Maine for Thanksgiving, and we opted to go to see Harry Potter instead.
You probably made the better choice.
I know. There are some people who I think have given me some grief, but there wasn't really any way to get back that in time for it, basically.
Well, we'll put it this way. Did anybody write to you and say, hey, man, why weren't you at our reunion?
Nobody wrote to me and asked me that, but afterwards it came up in random Facebook conversations somewhere. So, yeah, nobody really missed me. And I missed a couple people. There were a couple of people I know. My friend Brendan was there, I think, and I would have liked to hang out with him. Last time I hung out with him was the day Michael Jackson died, right before I came and picked you up at the airport. So it's been a while. So there were a couple people, but yeah, I mean, Harry Potter was cool. We saw it in IMAX with Kaylee, with the 4-year-old.
Nice.
Have you seen it yet?
I actually have not. I was gonna go, but then I had this whole dissertation thing to do.
Yeah. Well, you've read the books, right?
I have.
So you have you have an idea of what goes on in the books, which is, you know, this is a pretty faithful adaptation. So.
Oh, good. Harry Potter and shouting intense. Yay.
The tense is actually, it's faithful, but it's fast moving. And that is one of the cool things about it was that, you know, there is camping going on, but it's fairly streamlined, you know, all things considered.
I mean, cause it's like we get through 70 pages of, oh, I hate you, Harry. And then he walks out of the tent and walks around and then he comes back in and Harry's like, you guys are stupid. And he walks around for a while and he goes, come on.
You know, it's the sort of thing that given the way that they've adapted these books in the past, it really works because they just, you know, they cut all that down to, you know, a couple of sequences.
Well,
And the actors carry it without a lot of heavy exposition. So, but there are some scary scenes in that you'll remember, including near the beginning. And Kaylee had neglected to use the bathroom before the movie started. So I actually was considering myself kind of lucky because she sat there for the first sequence, which is kind of a montage of everyone getting ready for getting ready to leave their houses. There's some stuff that's not in the books that's in there. But anyway,
Eye of the Tiger playing in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this montage at the beginning, which is fairly straightforward and fairly kid friendly. And then she's like, okay, really, I got to go. So I'm like, okay, good. We're going to miss the thing at Malfoy Manor where the teacher is spinning around and so on and so forth. But in actuality, she didn't take that long in the bathroom. So we got back in time for Malfoy Manor. And there's a part where the snake comes menacingly towards the screen, and I'm just like, why did I bring my 4-year-old?
Nice.
She would have been heartbroken if we hadn't brought her.
Yeah, but we saw scary movies when we were kids, and I always thought it was fun. Like, I remember being scared, but then that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think she was okay with it, but I think there are a couple things that she's still probably having some nightmares about. And she's still, a week later, is asking us what happened to Dobby.
Dobby went on vacation.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like we've tried to explain it, and you know, we're fairly straightforward with her. We don't like to beat around the bush. You know, we say, you know, Dobby died, right? And she's like, yeah, but when you die, you're still alive, and sort of you try to
Yeah, she's 4, so you might want to give her a pass on that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, you try to change subjects and you try to, you know, not disturb her, but you try not to be, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, lie. I'm like, yeah, he didn't die. He's,
Well, and, it, you know, this is the time back. This is the time of year where lying to children is, yeah.
It's true, it's true. I was actually having a conversation with someone about this not too long ago. You know, like, do you tell the kid, hey, there's a Santa Claus? Do you not tell the kid?
Right.
And it's tough because if you don't tell the kid, they're going to go to their kindergarten and be like, there's no Santa Claus. And then everyone's parents will hate you.
Right. And it's a particularly awkward situation for Stephanie, who grew up as a Baha'i and generally without Santa Claus. She had some extended family who celebrated Christmas, so she didn't really grow up with that whole thing. And so the other day, Kaylee was asking some questions or delving into topics in a particular way when they were in the car together, and Steph had no idea how to answer these questions. And I've thought a lot about it too, because it's like, I don't want to lie to the kid. I remember it being kind of painful finding out. But on the other hand, there is still family who would like to, you know, continue the tradition. And so I've tried to find ways where I'm not particularly lying, you know. But, you know, then you kind of feel like Ben Kenobi. Yeah. You know, I was telling the truth from a certain point of view.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it kind of depends, I think, on how you handle the reveal. If you're like, we totally fooled you, loser. Right. Then that's, you know, that's a problem. But I think you can kind of do it in a way that's not necessarily mean, you know, right. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Like, yeah, and I hope that that's the way that it eventually comes out. And
you could build in a time limit. You could be like, well, Santa Claus actually, because there are so many children in the world, he only visit kids under a certain age. And after that, like, yeah. Your parents have to take over. And then I just never tell the truth.
I've sort of operated under the, you know, given what my parents told me, my recollection is the sort of, you know, like that there was a Santa Claus, and at one point, a long time ago, they didn't get into like a historical Santa, but there was a Santa Claus at some point, and that moms and dads and relatives continue the sort of tradition that Santa Claus set down. And so I kind of have that in the back of my brain when I'm answering these questions, and that's the angle that I try to come at it from. But, you know.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's a slippery slope, too, because, like, if you do the Santa thing, do you do the Tooth Fairy thing?
Right, yeah.
Do you do the Easter Bunny thing?
We kind of haven't done the Tooth Fairy or the Easter Bunny thing. I mean, she's too... Well,
do you
she's
do
not
the
young,
creepy
but...
Uncle Phil thing? Everybody told me he was just my imagination, and I just shut up.
I do have a friend named Phil whose stage name is Uncle Phil. He's not that
creepy. Apologies, sir.
He's not that creepy, but you know.
Uncle Jeff.
No, we haven't done any of that stuff. She hasn't lost any teeth yet, so we haven't had to deal with the tooth fairy thing.
Really? Wow. I feel like I lost most of them, but I, you know, wasn't like doing fighting and stuff.
Yeah. Mean streets alone.
Yeah, yeah, we were tough kids. You know, some nights we'd have only, like, you know, bars of iron to eat.
Oh, every time I try to explain to, whether it comes up in a class or with a new set of friends, and I explain how parents and chumps would tend to terrify us about crossing the border into Lowell, it gets a chuckle out of people. And I think one day I will write a story about, or an essay, it might actually be nonfiction, about the process of crossing under the bridge, the Route 3 bridge, with you and Jerry and Diane and whoever else from comic book store, that very first time when I was walking underneath the bridge and I'm going into Lowell. I'd been into Lowell in a car, maybe to the movies or something. Crossing under that bridge, I was kind of like, lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
Yeah, you can imagine how much fun it was in reverse transferring to Chelmsford Schools. So, does your whole family do crack? So, are you in a gang?
Yeah.
Yes. No, shut up. Oh, good times. Good times. Yeah, I don't know. It's a little silly. And, like, the sheer volume of Chelmsfordites who now live in Lowell because it's affordable, it's kind of funny. Seems like everybody I know from high school is either living here or in New Hampshire.
Yeah, yeah. Chelmsford, not quite affordable to live in for those of us who used to live there.
It's kind of sad, but, you know. I don't know, so...
But, you know, other than Santa Claus, what other kind of Christmas traditions did you deal with or
I don't know,
or
like,
still deal with? I mean,
I feel like we had a pretty standard Christmas for a while. I mean, my parents got divorced when I was 5, so that messes up your holidays a little bit. But, you know, we had the pretty usual thing, like you go find your tree sometime shortly after Thanksgiving and, you know, bring it home, let it stand around, decorate your tree. We had some homemade ornaments, which were kind of fun. But we were never like the cranberry string, popcorn string people that you see in like old movies. So we never did that. Too much pain. I don't know who has the patience to like put a needle through like pieces of... Ugh, good lord.
I have the patience to put needles through my eyelid, 9-inch nails through my eyelids, you know.
Sure, sure. So, that was all pretty ordinary. I mean, we had the, you know, you can open one present on Christmas Eve thing. Mm-hmm. My dad was always great, you know. Okay, Dad, I'm going to put out some Chips Ahoy for Santa and some milk. I think Santa would like some Oreos. Okay, Dad. That actually took a few years. We were like, wait a minute.
That's good.
Yeah, he was. I think actually Santa's all right with this beer. I mean, he'll be okay. Okay, Dad.
Yeah.
I mean, the usual, like, wake up Christmas morning, open everything real fast, make your dad put all the hard stuff together, and then ignore the rest of the family for the day. That was kind of my experience. But, like, once my parents were divorced, my mom worked most Christmases because she worked in an ambulance. So I kind of, like, growing up, most of my holidays are kind of time spent alone, which is weird. And, like, you know, it's funny because, you know, this year Nora's actually going to be here for Christmas and, like, real Christmas and hooray. And by coincidence of fate, the people that I live with are going away. So, like, we'll have the house to ourselves and, like, yay, first Christmas. Woohoo.
Right.
We'll make it dinner and we'll do stuff. We won't watch White Christmas, but, you know, we'll maybe the Charlie Brown
everything
Christmas.
Else.
And Nora was like, because she grew up Baha'i also, she was like, well, what's the big deal? And I'm like, what? And she's like, well, I mean, it's just this big commercial holiday that everybody, you know, like, just forgets the spirit of and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, but we don't have to be that way.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, for like 2 days, Nora was the Grinch. Fine, we won't have Christmas then. We'll celebrate something else that's more to your liking. Like,
well, you know, those Baha'is, they believe in messengers from God, right? So, you know, the Grinch probably fits into their canon somewhere.
You think so?
I think so.
Well, there was the medieval and then the early modern theory that God worked as both minister to the people and scourge, and that in both roles, you know, agents of God refined humanity. So I guess the Grinch could be a scourge.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Wow, we've gotten in a strange territory. I don't know. What will you do on Christmas?
Well, we did a lot of the same things. We were never allowed to open something on Christmas Eve. That's the one tradition that lots of friends had. That
it was from the stocking, I should be clear. It had to be something in your stocking.
Gotcha. Well, so we would go to bed, and very often there was very little underneath the tree Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And it was always sort of, we were really spoiled. You look at some pictures of the tree and of how far out the presents spilled into the living room. Some years, I mean, there's just literally no room to sit some years. They treat us really, really well on Christmas. So, you know, we'd spend a lot of time opening presents. In later years, it's still a tradition now, the day starts with scratch tickets. I don't And so there's scratch tickets my parents buy. There's scratch tickets my brother brings from California. And every once in a while, we don't usually buy them, but somebody else has given us scratch tickets from New Hampshire. So we've got scratch tickets from like three or four different states that we're scratching off with all sorts of different rules. And the California ones are always crazy. And we spend so much damn time scratching off scratch tickets that the rush to open presents is now, it's not an artificial rush or whatever, but the rush is now we've got to get it done so my mother can go finish cooking before everyone else shows up. And most, when we were kids, it alternated between my parents' house and my grandfather's house. But now everybody comes to us, and so, or to my parents' house. and the one thing I sort of miss that my kids don't get is the sort of going downstairs in the morning and finding stuff, because they know that everything's at Grimey's house.
I think that's why some people do like the Christmas Eve thing, because it's not quite the same, but like as waking up and going downstairs, but like then you have something at home that's kind of like your thing, you know?
Yeah. And we got into a habit of sort of buying ourselves one big gift each year. Mm-hmm. And so some years that Stephanie and I, that is, some years that's been something that's been too big. And so we just open a house and then we've got nothing to give each other when we get there, which is kind of weird.
Just a handshake. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Life.
But last year, the other tradition that had been in place was just sort of turning on the TV. And there were some people that would just sit in the living room and watch TV all day.
Yeah.
Last year we got our Wii and we had the Wii over there, and video games throughout the afternoon became new tradition. And everyone seemed to have a lot more fun.
Yeah. I just did Thanksgiving with Julie's family, and it was very nice of them to invite me, and the food was good and everything. But like growing up, I had never grown up in the house where we watched football all day. I just didn't. So consequently, I'm not a big football fan. Oh, well, guess what? The geeky music guy isn't a football guy.
Yeah, big surprise.
But they do. And so, sitting there in the living room with three other guys watching a TV, which was, 50 inches with football on it, just kind of so, when's stuff going to happen? It is happening. Well, but he only ran for 8 seconds, and now there's a commercial break.
Right.
And now they've come back, and he ran for 10 seconds, and there's a commercial break. There's an hour of scheduled play, and this game is going to take 4 hours.
Yep.
And everybody's like, yeah. Doesn't that seem ridiculous to anybody else? I like baseball. I like baseball very much. And baseball, but the stopping points in baseball are logical.
Mm-hmm.
The inning has ended. This half of the inning has ended.
Right.
There is a pitching change. It's not like, he ran two bases, so we'll be back in a few minutes.
I honestly think it's one sport that, excuse me, that if it weren't for TV commercials and being televised, it would make a lot more sense. Everyone's got a set number of timeouts, but I think there are also TV timeouts, right?
Yeah, there are, yeah.
And television, what is interesting, because we will see, and it's very often at the end of the game, mm-hmm. where you're kind of like, you get really sort of build up ahead of steam, like in the beginning of the second half of a football game, even into the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then the last 5 minutes of the football game take like an hour and a half, is what it seems like. Especially when the score is close, because everyone keeps taking timeouts, or in football you've got alternate ways to stop the clock, and every time the clock stops, you're right, there's a commercial.
And oh, and for God's sake, I mean, how many ways can they find to work the phrase "the football" into a conversation? Like, I mean, okay, I get that sometimes we are actually referring to the actual football.
Right.
But I mean, how many ways can you work the football into a sentence, you know? And it's like in different tenses and different moods. And it's just like,
guys. So you're sitting there, you know, just having finished your PhD in a very Dr. Martin frame of mind, watching football and analyzing the language.
Well, it's anthropologically interesting because you don't really get that in baseball. You know, like, you don't really get a lot of the baseball. You know, it's just, you don't get it in basketball. It's just,
hey, you want to head out to the field and play the baseball?
Yeah, it doesn't happen. But it was very strange. So, yeah, I felt very out of place watching.
Yeah, well, we don't usually, because there are more women in, we usually have Thanksgiving with Steph's side of the family. There are more women. I'm getting in trouble for saying that because I know there are plenty of female football fans out there.
But thankfully, they don't listen to us.
Right. There are more women who are not interested in football. I should just say there are more people who aren't interested in football in Steph's family than there are people who are interested.
Yeah, there you go.
This year and every few years when the Patriots end up playing on Thanksgiving, which is not that often, we will watch it. But this year, my brother-in-law... and his girlfriend, fiance, whatever, partner, had a baby. So we were at the hospital the second part of the afternoon. And football was kind of on, but we were visiting. So I think ultimately when it comes to holidays and the TV, if it becomes real just you plugged into the TV and no conversation happening, then it gets really boring really fast. And I think that's why the Wii was more exciting last time, because we were playing, we were having conversations, we were switching off. Some of us had never played it before. You know, it was,
it was
more fun. It's more interactive.
Christmas is a weird time for TV too, because you get tons of Christmas movies and on surface everybody's like, yeah, this is a great movie, it's a classic. And then you start to watch those movies and, I mean, I've never been It's a Wonderful Life fan. It's just, you know, okay, I get it. It's a cute little message. But, I mean, I grew up in an era when from Thanksgiving to Christmas, it was on 50 times.
Right.
You know, now the network's restricted to that, like, once a year viewing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Back in the day, oh, look, It's a Wonderful Life is on seven channels again. And, you know, so that doesn't really do it for me. I'm going to get flack for this, but I don't like the movie A Christmas Story.
Mm.
Anytime around Christmas, somebody's like, oh, you'll shoot your eye out, huh? Good one, right? And I'm like, yeah, not really.
I saw it once and was completely underwhelmed.
But... Yeah. I think we watched it in school, of all things. And I was just like, yeah, okay, kid got his tongue stuck to a flagpole. That's rough.
I'm just thinking about the logistics of that. Did they have to send permission forms home to allow you to watch something?
I don't know. I don't remember.
It's like for that movie to like go through the logistics of making sure it's okay for your Jewish classmates to watch a Christmas movie. And
oh, maybe. I mean, we probably watched it in Lowell, though. We don't have any of those cultural sensitivities.
Right.
But
sorry, forgot. Sorry.
Sometimes they're fun to make fun of, although it gets you in trouble.
Christmas movies are Jews.
Let's go with Christmas movies, thanks. although, I'm going to do both right now, sort of. Our friend Diana, whose family is somewhat Jewish, her favorite Christmas movie in the world is White Christmas, which I don't know if you've seen it.
I don't know if I have.
Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, and the idea is they're two singing servicemen.
Uh-huh.
And the war ends, and their general, who they all love very much, moves up to Vermont and opens a ski lodge, except nobody comes because it doesn't snow enough and for whatever reason, bad luck. So
okay.
Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby are touring as singers, and guess where they end up? The ski lodge. And they decide that they're going to save it for the general.
This is like the plot of a Police Academy movie.
It kind of is, actually. I just watched Police Academy 3, I'm not proud to say. Anyway, so there are also these two women that they try to get to perform with them, but watch that movie and tell me Danny Kaye isn't running interference. It is quite possibly the most homoerotic Christmas movie you've ever seen in your life. Like, there are just scene after scene where you're like, exactly what sort of relationship do they have? Because, yeah, there's some interference being run. So anyway, so they of course, put on this big show, and it finally snows, and there's a white Christmas, and they save the lodge. Her favorite Christmas movie, I have a really hard time sitting through it with a straight face. And I'm not like that guy who's like... But, yeah, that's a tough one. So if you need a good laugh, just watch that one as if you were 12.
Okay. Gotcha.
Wow. Right. Well, yeah, there's not a lot on TV on Christmas. It's...
And there's not a lot on the radio either.
Oh, good Lord.
You know, thankfully, in this age of iPods and MP3 players, you know, that's not a problem. But when I was in my car... That had no working CD player or tape player in it, and I had to listen to the radio.
Oof, I'd kill myself.
And that, I mean, you'd kill yourself year round. I want to kill myself around Christmas time because the songs start pre Thanksgiving now. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it starts in November. It starts post Halloween.
It's like, true. The decorations go up on November 1st, and you're just like, what?
But I mean. So in terms of music, are there any songs, are there any holiday songs that you can stomach? I mean, there are a few that I can stomach for like the week before Christmas. I'm like, I could just listen the week before Christmas, have these on heavy rotation, I'd be cool with that.
But, yeah, it's rough. I mean, you know, I like some that aren't necessarily, you know, reflective of the spirit we're aiming for, like the Pogues, Christmas, is it Christmas Time in New York? Is that it?
I think so.
Yep. Never remember the title quite right. I actually like The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping, although I wouldn't want to listen to it necessarily for like a whole month.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough. See, my mom was hugely enamored of an album I'm sure you'll be familiar with, The Twisted Christmas with the novelty Christmas yes. songs.
Yes.
That'll pretty much do in any desire to listen to Christmas music. And if that doesn't, then Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree will finish it off.
Do you have any affection for the for Springsteen doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
You know, once in a while. Yeah. But, I mean, I guess I aim more towards the traditional. Like, if I'm going to put on Christmas music, then I aim for, like, the nice choir or the cello, you know, the chamber music or...
Right.
There's a couple of Scots-Irish musicians I like that do kind of like medieval, early modern Christmas songs that are actually really cool. But yeah, I sound hip now. But,
well, no, you know, it's interesting that you say that, and I can't ever remember the name of the podcast or whatever that I heard this on, because I'm not sure I'm still subscribed to it. But there was something I was listening to last year and maybe the year before that where every year they dig out the really random Christmas music. Because the truth is, like, there's tons of stuff out there. It's a really – but we get the same maybe – just like with the rest of radio, we get the same 20 to 30 songs on rotation for the entire 2 months now.
Yeah. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer again. Yeah. Yay.
I mean, and that's why – like, I actually really like the Springsteen one, and I'm actually looking forward to that week before Christmas listening to it. Like, I'll listen to it that one time. But if I was listening to the radio right now – and having to hear it like every hour on the hour.
Can you imagine working retail right now? Ugh. I mean, no,
not at all.
Just no.
Yeah.
I mean, I swear after 2 weeks, people are like, you getting excited for Christmas? No. I'm getting excited for December 26th when I don't have to listen to this anymore.
Oh, but December 26th is like the worst day to work retail after Black Friday, right?
Yeah. Poor bastards.
Um, I think there are some that I a couple of years ago I went on a binge and bought all the ones that I wanted to hear so that I could control it. So
yeah,
that's when I want to listen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I pretty much. I mean, I some of the sort of standard ones. You know, one record that I wish I could find. I'm sure my parents still have it, but it is a record. Literally, it's vinyl. There was a Disney one that we listened to as kids. And I have a real it might be terrible, but I have a real nostalgia for
No,
that.
I had a couple of those. I had a couple of those, and they were sandwiched, I can see it in my mind, in between a Donald Duck, which was a takeoff of Flashdance. And I think the Lady and the Fox or something like that, some random thing. So yeah. But no, I remember the Disney Christmas ones. Those were okay.
Huh.
Yeah, actually, that makes me think of Christmas specials. And there are so few now that I like really want to watch. I used to have this tape when I was a kid, and we goofed around with this. I'm sure we mentioned it in the podcast where we'd sing music to it.
Right.
And yeah, I still kind of have fond memories of the Smurf Christmas and, of course, Charlie.
Was there a She-Ra Christmas? You know, a couple episodes ago, we talked about
the internet.
And now all of a sudden I'm like, was there a She-Ra He-Man one? I feel like there was.
I feel like there was a He-Man one. Oh, yes, and it's on YouTube. The He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special.
Nice.
Oh, there's a Wikipedia entry as well. Let's see what's going on in there.
I don't know if I ever had it.
This year.
What's that? It's on this year?
It's on DVD this year.
There are a couple that I dig. Like, I'll watch Charlie Brown Christmas once, you know. I actually kind of dig the Rudolph one.
Yeah, well, which one? Because there were a couple. I like the one with the, like, stop motion.
The Rankin-Bass, like, stop motion one.
Because there's a Yeti in it. How do you know that as a kid?
Exactly. I mean, the thing doesn't make any sense, but it's great.
Yeti.
You know. What's the other? I like Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I think that's another Rankin-Bass, like stop motion one.
Uh-huh.
About the Burgermeister is in that.
And you gotta dig the Grinch, obviously.
Yeah, Grinch.
You know, Peanuts.
The animated Grinch, not the.
Oh yeah. Oh god. Yeah. No, not that.
This weekend we're going to see what is it? Polar Express.
Mm-hmm.
As part of a daycare
uh-huh.
fundraiser. And that one I don't mind, but I kind of resisted it the first time someone tried to show it to me. And then last year they did it as a fundraiser and I sat through it. I'm like, it's not terrible. But it is creepy because it's one of those Zemeckis, like...
The Uncanny Valley effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Google it.
Yes. I did Google it the last time someone mentioned. I don't know if you mentioned it. Or
no, I'm saying to our listener because I'm sure as hell not getting into it.
But yeah. So Christmas music, Christmas movies. I'll be happy when the whole thing is over.
You know, it's sad, but the only thing I'm really looking forward to is that Christmas morning and like making dinner and
Yeah, I should rephrase that. I'll be happy when the whole anticipation is over. There are a couple of stops along the way. There's a family get together next weekend that I'll enjoy. My mom's company has a Christmas party that we take the kids to. Like every other weekend, it seems like there's something.
I want to go to a Christmas party. I'm going to go to, like, one of those Christmas movies, you know, parties you see in movies where, like, people wear, you know, funny costumes and drink punch and hijinks ensue.
Well, but, you know what the answer to that is throw your own Christmas party, right?
I can't. I'm living with people who I don't think would be down with the Christmas
party. Yeah, but you said they're going away. I mean, it's like, it's the opportunity to live the... You know, relive the glory days, right? Have a Christmas party and relive the glory days of what happens when your parents go away for the week or the whatever.
You make a tempting offer, but then if I say, "Hey, would you come?" You'd be like, "No, I'm busy. I got family."
You never know. You never know. I might be able to put it down on my schedule.
I see. Well, here's the thought. Speaking of holiday related get-togethers, kind of. We actually didn't get around to that whole fun spot thing in the month of November. But I thought I would suggest a date.
Mm.
See what you think.
A date.
How about December 19th?
19th. I must Sunday. Look at my trusty calendar, but I don't think there's anything on there. Nope.
Because right. you won't be teaching and I won't be teaching.
That's right. Yeah, no, I'm actually done the 15th. So, yeah. Yeah, it's my last.
What do you think? Should we put it out there? December 19th?
December 19th.
All right.
I got something on the 18th. What's on the 18th?
Well, I'll what's have my... just flown back from England on the 17th. So right. I'll be sleeping.
You'll be sleeping all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's put out the 19th. I think it's fun.
Woo!
That works.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You hear that, listener?
I went to an arcade recently. I went to Chuck E. Cheese recently.
Ouch. Why?
Well, my relatives wanted to take us out, and they wanted to do something where the kids would have some fun. And
okay, I thought you were like, yeah, they wanted to take Steph and I out, so they were looking for a restaurant in the area.
No. We so
they're
we
thinking to restaurants where you can buy food and tokens, so that narrowed it down.
We went to the Chuck E. Cheese up in Manchester, which is apparently cooler than the one in Lowell or wherever it is.
Whatever.
I've not been to the one in Lowell.
You can go to your nice, safe Chuck E. Cheese, all right? I like mine with a bit of gang violence.
Well, you know, Manch Vegas is, you know, it's got its own little whatever. I didn't quite feel safe. No, anyway. Well, there were the cool thing about it was that everything cost just a token, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. But there weren't that many games to play.
No.
You know, like, and some of them were sort of proprietary Chuck E. Cheese games. And so I think I ended up playing Street Hoops, one of those basketball games where you throw it, and the what makes it street is it's got a chain.
Right. Stick. Sure. Plus it shoots you. When you
yeah, exactly. It's like, damn, fool, you didn't get enough in. Bam!
This is a trail of bodies leading from the machine.
Yeah. And most of them like 5-6-year-old bodies.
That's right. Yeah, I used to go to Chuck E. Cheese when I was a kid, you know, when it was the 80s and it was still, like, acceptable. Mm. I used to go to the one in Danvers, I think, because that was the only one that was around. And, you know, they had more arcade games then. I have very fond memories of playing Dig Dug at Chuck E. Cheese, but also, like, crawling through that maze that was the house.
Yeah, I mean, they've got plenty of rides and amusements and things up front that I think some of the kids went on. I spent a lot of time eating pizza and watching everyone's stuff.
Yeah, pizza. That thin, flavorless Chuck E. Cheese pizza.
Yeah, it was not all that great. But
it's like the only thing that makes you go, dude, you know what would be good right now? Little Caesars. It's like the only pizza in the world.
You know, I don't know if I've ever had Little Caesars.
There's one on Drum Hill now in Chelmsford.
Is there?
It moved across the street, and now it's where the Carvel was.
Oh,
If you remember.
I do remember. Never got a Fudgy the Whale either.
Cookie Puss.
Cookie Puss.
I think I had Cookie Puss for my third birthday, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
My aunt, before she passed away, she was really, really good at making cakes and such. And so if you look at the early birthdays for me and my brother, yeah, they were cakes, and they were always stuff that she...
I had some really impressive cakes early on as well, and then, like, now I just get kind of like an ordinary cake, and that's fine, but it's like, yeah, you know, just because a brother's 31 doesn't mean he doesn't want to.
Exactly. Well, you know, I have the problem of, like, 3 or 4 other relatives all having their birthdays around me now, and that's a whole, like, sort of subsection of the family, and so they all get together for their birthday. We get invited,
mm-hmm,
and I might get sort of one happy birthday out of, like, the entire day. You know, people just forget because they're so busy celebrating those people.
Which one of you is oldest?
Well, technically, my aunt she just turned 50, and she's born the day after me. So
I thought maybe you could claim superiority.
Yeah, well, I mean, amongst
I was here first.
Yeah. Amongst my generation, I'm definitely, you know, the elder statesman.
You're old.
The best birthday cake I ever had was actually a cookie.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a big cake person. And it was actually one of my best birthdays of all time. It was a college birthday, like junior year, I think. And everyone went to such a great effort to convince me they were all too busy. And they all had really convincing excuses. And so I was eating dinner with my co-editor-in-chief of the literary magazine at the time. And she said, let's go up. We were in the snack bar area where our band once played.
Shut up. Moving on.
And
you're thinking of somebody else's band.
Somebody else. And so she's like, oh, can we go up to the office? Because our office was upstairs. And went up there. And how had I not noticed, like, 13, 14, maybe a couple dozen people going up the stairs the, like, previous half hour or so? But I went up there and opened
like
the door.
Balloons and a pony and a cake walking by, clowns, yeah. Fireworks, jugglers. You're like, what is all that?
I went up there and they all yell surprise out of this little room, and I literally fell back against the wall because no one had ever surprised me. And I got a big cookie for a cake.
Nice. I still haven't got a surprise birthday. You know, I still haven't got a surprise birthday. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
I'm going to surprise myself. Yeah. I'm going to get Alzheimer's and then record messages. Leave them around. Surprise!
Record a videotape of yourself surprising yourself.
That's right.
Or to surprise yourself once you've got Alzheimer's.
Or both, because I'll have forgotten I did it. So I've got to record both of them, really. It's funny because it's probably true.
Oh, I was like, how did we get to cakes? And of course, we got to cakes through Carvel, and we got to Carvel through Drum Hill.
Steven, that I live with, is from Yonkers in New York, and Carvel is like the thing down there. Like, he didn't even grow up with real ice cream. Like, they thought Carvel soft serve was ice cream.
Oh, no.
I mean, I'm from New England, and I'm sorry, listener, if you're from one of those horrible places where you don't have ice cream, but like England. But, we grew up with 60, 70 flavors being the norm. And right. The ice cream was made of, like, cow milk that came from nearby. And it was hard, not soft. We got these lovely things called fraps. You take the ice cream, no milk. You put ice into it, and you whip it, and then you drink it. The amount of times I've traveled and tried to explain that to people, like, oh, can I get a frap? You mean a milkshake? Not at all.
So, okay, that's what a frap is. So, a frap is ice cream and
ice.
And, done. Ice cubes.
Yeah.
Milkshake is
flavored syrup plus milk.
Flavored syrup and milk, right?
Occasionally some ice cream is in there, but it's not a frap because it's liquid.
A freeze, which I was the term for
the sorbet equivalent. Right? Yeah, or the sherbet equivalent. Yeah.
Are there any other?
I met someone once recently who says sherbet, like it's written.
Yeah,
you know, that blew my mind.
Of all the words that we drop the R's of when we're from Massachusetts,
we got to put them back in somewhere. Hey, it could be worse. If I were from parts of Ohio, I would say George Washington.
Yes, I have not been to Ohio, so thank God.
The actual technical term is hypercorrection, and you can look it up. So, yeah, no, but I don't know. I just...
Ice cream is a very important thing, and I actually... The fact that my wife prefers soft serve over hard serve just...
See, I knew I had a bad feeling about her, you know, like, and I've had it since college, but I just couldn't put my finger on it.
You know,
that's it right there. That's why she's no fun.
Because she likes soft serve. I think my mom might like soft serve too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling about her too. I don't know. To me, it's like liking the soft serve is like saying that you're an accomplished connoisseur of alcoholic beverages and then going into a bar and saying, can I have the weakest drink you have, please? And keep it coming.
Can I have a Zima?
Yeah. I'd like the O'Doul's and Zima, please. If you have any Bartles and James, I'll be back. You know, it's just, I don't know. Wow, there's some commercials that need to be YouTubed.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I don't know.
So ice cream important. Also important to drive the Christmas music away. Mixtapes, right? I mean,
right. Yeah, that's what I tend to do with holidays.
Yeah, put on your own music. I mean, that's the whole beauty of iPads and MP3s and whatever, right? Is iPads, iPods, and
yeah. MP3. I get to play with my first iPad recently. I know behind the times, but Diana came to visit, and I guess her work gave her one, because logically, everything is more productive with an iPad. And, you know, it's nifty, but it's kind of like, man, if I'm going to carry around something that weighs this much, why not just get a laptop?
Well, I mean, I am actually about to get ourselves one. We're going to get one. What's that?
I don't know.
We here in the Clark family are going to get one. I'm going to write about that next week on
Geek. All right. Five, maybe you can change my mind.
How we came to it. But I mean, I dig it as a media consumption device, and I've also seen it as an interesting musical instrument. Like the play that I was in, a couple of times, they used an iPad to generate some of the in between show music, and that was really cool.
Maybe I need to see more interesting uses of it.
Yeah, I mean, a while back I linked a dude who was doing things with the Paint app. It's not called Paint, it's called Brushes. And he does this amazing portrait, and you watch it, and you watch what this thing is capable of. And for certain applications, I think it can be very useful. I'm curious to see. I just read an article about a guy who a book lover who's converted over to ebooks to a certain extent, who likes the iPad because he can do both iPad, Kindle, and Nook. So he has the widest variety instead of being stuck with one of the other ones. But he's talked about headaches, you know, so I'm kind of curious.
I'm not sure you get to be a book lover if your goal is to remove all the books from your house.
No. He absolutely was not getting rid of all the books.
All right.
But he was dealing with a problem in that he had moved into his partner's house, and his books had taken up every piece of wall space, and he's a writer, and he's still the sort of person that's going out and buying.
Well, okay, good for him then.
So he's still buying books. In fact, so the iPad has cut down on his consumption a little bit, but he's still buying.
I mean, it's just, it would be traumatic. Like, I'm looking over your shoulder at your bookshelf, and I mean, if you were forced to give up that copy of Mein Kampf, I mean, you'd be upset.
I would. You know, Hitler makes some great points in there.
That's right. Hello, and welcome to Anti-Semitic Goat.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are certain books that I could give up.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
Oh, jeez.
Stalin, he was... No,
but I mean, I could give up some of these. Not a lot of the ones back there. There are some over here on the other shelf. Stuff that I'm never going to read again. And then there are things that I would like to have a copy with me almost at all times, kind of. Just things that, like, I'm a huge Debuse fan, and there are things that I would like to be able to bring up.
I should introduce you to the man at some point. I really
should. His dad. I've actually not read any of his stuff, and I actually did meet him once. He was on the platform party. He was the commencement speaker, and I was the student speaker.
In
99. So, I would like to meet him again. But so there are some books I could give up. Anyway, so we're getting an iPad. I'll talk a little bit about that.
Cool.
Coming up on Geek Force 5. But
yeah, fair enough.
Because the process by which we, as a very cash-strapped family, are getting a $500 device is interesting. That's all. That's what I'm going to talk about.
Stealing it, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Off the back of a truck, like our friend.
Good for you.
Got a MacBook or.
Yeah, you gotta love the fell off a truck. That's a classic. In many ways, I think you have to forgive someone for stealing it if what they come up with is I fell off a truck. Dude, it's 50 crates of salmon. I know, it fell off a truck. What was I going to do, leave it there?
I don't know how we got talking about iPads. Because I misspoke. But mixtapes, you had mentioned something last time about Cameron Crowe and how Cameron,
in
an interview about Almost Famous, talks about having kept mixes around for the various months of his life, throughout most of his life, so that when he went to look at the soundtrack for Almost Famous, he just looked at the tapes and saw what he was listening to at the time. And so you mentioned that you were doing something similar, and I kind of wondered about like the logistics of that. Do you just open up? Because, and here's why I'm wondering, because ever since I got iTunes, really, and since I got an iPod, my mixes and playlists have gotten progressively more mechanical. Yeah. So I love Last.fm, but Last.fm also sort of enables me in that way. And that basically everything revolves around how often something was getting played during a particular period. But that tends to not give you sort of a good flowing experience. And so I guess, A, you know, how do you, how are you working that? Do you sort of start with a blank playlist and throw stuff into it? Or, you know, like, how do you do it?
Well, it's a couple different things. I mean, sometimes, you know, like everybody else, I need inspiration. I'm like, my go-to is usually Last.fm, but I do tend to find sometimes that it's like, wow, it really seems to be coming back to the same song a lot. So, one of the things that I found that I've really liked, and they were nice enough to accept my blog as one of their things, is something called Shuffler.fm, which is more current music, and it's broken by genre. And so what happens is you'll pick, say, folk, and at the top there'll be a banner which has the MP3 and it's playing, and below is the actual blog post where it came from. Mm. When the next song starts, it goes to the next blog and a different song, which is kind of cool because it's a way to see a lot of blogs and hear a lot of different music. So that works as inspiration sometimes, because sometimes I'll just go dig through those blogs. But when it comes time to, like, you know, sit down and do my own thing at home, a lot of times I really do just open up the Winamp, start new playlist, and I don't know, it's kind of one of those subjective things where you just start leafing through, and then, all right, I haven't listened to the Culture Club lately, you know, or whatever. And it's interesting because, yes, sometimes the months are pretty repetitive, but I think actually that's kind of telling too, you know, where moods don't necessarily stop and start because the calendar changed. Right. So, for me, it's a pretty old school standard process of just, oh, wow, this Bob Dylan song reminds me of this other song, reminds me of that song. And I actually don't mind stopping what I'm doing to manipulate the Winamp, but some people like the music to be like set it and forget it.
It's more hands-on. I kind of have gotten into the sort of set it and forget it mode, and so what I'm hearing is kind of like you do have to stop every once in a while and say, you know, I need to go over here and actually make a choice about what's coming next.
I mean, one of the really nice things though is that there are some blogs like the Fuel Friends blog is one of them. I've been listening. She makes mixes periodically, but she makes one for every season as well. Mm-hmm. And her fall or autumn, depending on what part of the country you're from, mix was amazing. I've listened to it like 50 times this month. And so that's nice because sometimes you find ready-made mixes. Captain Obvious is another blog where there are like covers mixes a lot of the times that come out once a month, and those are quite good. And I mean, a lot of music blogs are nice in that you can find ready-made mixtapes, as it were. And and so that sometimes is a nice way to get around the set it and forget it problem without having to necessarily think too hard.
So are you set when you do like the playlist for the month? Are you giving yourself certain parameters? I mean, do you sit there and say, I'm only going to do, you know, 20 songs, or I'm only going to do...
No, not really. I mean, maybe if I did that, I could, you know, put some thought into it and say, okay, well, this meant more to me or that meant more to me. But I guess maybe because I like anthropology and history, I don't throw out any of the data. So if the playlist is 800 songs long, I mean, the thing about it is that I don't like put 400 songs on and then go, I'm going to drag these songs up to the top of the list.
Right.
So for me, it is a progression through the month, you know, so I can see where it started and where it went and then where it ended up. And like, for me, that's actually more interesting. So I just, I save the raw data. If I were then to try to, cause some blogs kind of put up a, like, our favorite songs of the month thing. And if I were to try to do something like that, then I would, you know, I would obviously have to look at that and say, okay, well, what's going on this month? But no, I actually like the raw data. I feel like if I ever try to write about these periods in time, then I'll want to know that, you know, for whatever reason, I have this habit of sticking Echo and the Bunnymen between Joy Division and The Cure, you know, but only those two songs. By Echo
right.
And
the do you find yourself ever, something that's been in my head recently is, the idea of, even though we're not limited by a 90-minute tape anymore, the idea of trying to put together something that would fit that would have fit on a 90-minute tape.
Yeah, well, I guess I should say, I mean, I do still make mixes for the car, right? On the old-spangled CD medium. So I do still time limit. Usually when we drive to Funspot, I end up making these mixes, actually. Yeah. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But yeah, there is something about that. I mean, you know, you do have to kind of keep your skills together, you know, like do you build real fast and then cool it off, or do you start slow and then build up and then cool it off? Do you never cool it off?
Right.
Does it become that mixtape from How I Met Your Mother where it was just, you know, you give love a bad name over and over again?
You know, it's interesting to try. I've been teaching this magazine production class.
Yeah.
And I've been trying, the metaphor I keep coming back to as I try to explain to them the idea of shaping a magazine is this story that Trent Reznor tells on Closure about, he's not really telling a story, it's just over his shoulder as he's explaining to someone how he likes to build a set that start fast and then it dips and then it comes back up and finishes strong. And I've been trying to explain it using that metaphor, and they kind of get a blank look on their face.
Your kids are like, we were born in the 90s, too.
Yeah, I think they would get an equally blank look on their face if I tried to use the mixtape metaphor. Because
God, don't get me started.
It's like they don't get it, right? Like, they don't get the idea of crafting.
I said it to Nora once. I was like, oh, I'm making a mixtape. And she's like, I don't have a tape deck. I'm like, no, it's just a thing people... Oh no. I'm old.
Yeah, we are.
I'll just get in my jalopy and leave. That's terrible.
Get off my lawn with your MP.
I've actually yelled at kids to get off my lawn. This year, dude.
I don't have much of a lawn, so I have not yelled at people.
I moved back onto campus for the end of the year, and like our building was part of a square. There were three other buildings that comprised the square.
Yeah.
Our building was grad students who were studying and working, and the other buildings were all undergraduates who were drinking and partying and having block parties every single night.
Right.
Outside my window, which was single pane. And so at about 4:30 in the morning, when drunk people were out there yelling at each other and breaking bottles, I actually did go out and yell at them to get off my lawn. And then I came back inside and was like, I just yelled at teenagers. And not ironically, I really wanted to get off my lawn. Oh my God, is it time to fill out my will?
Yeah, it might be time to file for Social Security.
I couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh. And that Simpsons thing goes through your head, you know, where you're like, I used to rock and roll all night and party every day. Then it was every other day. And then it was just once a week. Now I'm lucky if I can find once a month in which to get funky.
Yeah, that's reality for us right now.
I couldn't believe it. I yelled at kids to get off the lawn.
Well, you know, I, you know, since you're the bird of the podcast, I can sort of see that you would be the first to do that.
All right. Yeah, and I told them they were making a mess. It was rough. It was rough.
At what point, you know, when Ernie finally yells at the kids to get off the lawn, then you know they're in trouble.
That's right. Yeah, but that's usually, I would always imagine that part of an act of going postal. You know, Ernie would yell at them to get off the lawn with a rifle.
But here's the thing. I'm probably more apt to yell at my own kids to get off the lawn.
Yeah. Do you yell at them much? Do you feel bad about it?
I feel bad about even raising my voice towards my kids. Like, you know, there's that, you know, that was my dad's old thing. He's like, I'm not yelling. I'm raising my voice.
Yeah. No, you're yelling, dude. It feels like.
But, you know, like, I lose my temper from time to time. And I think part of that is being stuck in the house a lot. And part of it is setting really unrealistic goals for myself that I never meet. And taking my frustration out on everyone else. So I do yell from time to time. And I get impatient about sort of the silliest things. But, you know, I get impatient about messes. And this is really interesting to me in that, like, I kind of, along with Stephanie and along with a couple of friends of ours, all born in October, I really strangely identify with my sign, with Libra, which is, you know, the person who wants balance and so on and so forth. One of our friends this summer was talking about how Libras are messy by default. And I kind of don't feel like I'm messy. You know, you can see my office and it is kind of a mess. But but when it's a mess that I can control, like I know where stuff goes, even then I'm not all that messy. But the rest of the people that I live with are very, very messy.
Yeah, me too, actually.
And it just gets on me, right? Like, you know, when Kaylee leaves her coat on the floor every night, and I realize she can't hang it up herself. Like, there's no stool over there for her to hang it up or whatever. But I tell her every night, please just hand me the coat and I will hang it up. Don't put it on the floor. She will kick off her shoes. Stephanie will kick off her shoes. They'll be in the middle of the floor and I'll be bringing dinner out and trying not to trip over shoes. It's just, and I, anyway.
Do you think our 18-year-old selves would kick our asses for this?
I think our 18-year-old selves couldn't kick anyone's asses. They would think about it, but
they could take us. I'm pretty sure they could take us.
I don't know. I mean, my 18-year-old self was already had already gained his freshman 15 and was working on his sophomore 15, and I'm a bit more in shape than my 18-year-old self.
I don't know.
But maybe that's just the old man in me wanting to believe that I'm spry enough to.
I have similar problems. Like for me, the kitchen is a perpetual kind of battleground, and I'm not OCD, but I like clean kitchens. I just do. Like, I like knowing that if I accidentally drop some food off my plate onto the counter, I can still eat it. Like, I get up right away, you know, because the counter is clean. But some people have a tendency to make things with sauces and then take the spoon that they were tasting the sauce with and just put it on the counter, you know, stuff like that. And it like drives me up a wall.
I'm never inviting you into my kitchen. It will drive you insane. Like, it may end our friendship, but
is this my life? Like, is this the stuff that I'm upset about? And I think it's because I am, like, I have pretty much spent the entire year indoors. Like, I've been out, I've gone to the store and I've done stuff, but most of the time I'm sitting in front of this computer.
Right.
Working on stuff. And
and that's been me too. I mean, I think that's part of it. We are hermits stuck in our houses.
We need to get out more.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking of starting to go to the gym again because I'm corpulent. And I don't know. I mean, it's not quite that severe, but.
No, I don't think you're corpulent. I think corpulent is probably. I'm trying to think of an example of corpulent. Although. Apparently there's this guy, something Iglesias, a comedian, who has various definitions of fat and like their various levels. And one of them is like, God damn.
Yeah. Not there yet, but
yeah, no, I don't think so.
There's a certain amount of decrepitude. So I was actually starting to think about, you know, going to the gym again. I was actually going to ask you to go because, that seemed like something you would do.
You know, I've done most of my working out over this year in the house, and that might be part of my problem too, is that I've found solutions for lots of my problems that involve me staying right here.
Yeah, no, me too. Like, I don't need to go out to buy music.
So the idea of the gym is actually kind of appealing.
We'll work on it then. Maybe that would be something to do in the new year, because December is impossible to plan anything.
Yeah, I am finding that. I'm getting people asking me, you know, are you coming to this? Are you coming to that? I'm just like,
I'm not getting any of that.
Well,
tell them to invite me.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these are family things or little things, you know.
Oh, well, whatever, then. All right. Are you going to...
We've got our fun spot, you know. That's...
That's true. That's true. December 19th. We will invite people. You have to go find Herr Hicks and tell him, though, because... God forbid that he ever respond to an email of mine.
You know, that actually, you know, we're always looking for interesting ways to sing, right? But
yeah, of course we are.
What's that?
Of course we are.
Exactly. You know, every once in a while, there's one that goes by and you don't even notice it. I'm like, Well, we notice it because we're looking at each other as someone's trying. You know, you can see the wheels turning, but people on the other end of the people in the headphones don't notice. Anyway, so. The fact that Andy, when he comments, seems to comment on my repost of Generation Goat and not over on the actual blog itself, is part of the reason for a slight, it's not even a redesign, like a slight shifting of purpose on the front page of Geek Force 5. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm going to stop posting the whole episode on Geek Force 5 and point people over to Generation
Goat. That would be nice, because right now... Our traffic statistics are really hard to keep track of.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is that to get people over on Generation Goat. And so there'll probably be posts about that, but there's also going to be a dedicated Generation Goat button along with a dedicated videos button.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that. The final part of that is by having those two buttons, I have to do something with the worth your consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know where that's going to go. It's going to go underneath where the less recent posts are, but I haven't quite figured out how to make that work. As soon as I do, though, there's a dedicated goat button, and I'm
looking
forward to that.
I like the idea of a button that just makes goats come.
Yes. I would like a goat button, you know.
In a pier.
Or just a button that we could press that would make a goat bleat or something, you know, sort of just... like the unmentioned thing that we used to do a lot of that, yeah.
Anywho, I'm not sure that your unmentioned thing is the same as my unmentioned thing.
No,
ask because that's uncomfortable. Now.
I was thinking of the animals with the music tuning going on that we don't do.
Oh, that we
used to basically have on a button. So
right. But we retired those.
We did retire them.
Which apparently means we have to talk about them like we have to talk about Dobby.
Right. Yes. Yes, I think so. Because I think...
They're gone, but they're not gone.
They are. I mean, it's sort of, you know, in Deathly Hallows, if somebody says Voldemort, then the Snatchers and Voldemort's Death Eaters know where you are, right? So if we were to actually say...
You know, I hear if you say the thing we're not supposed to say three times in the mirror, they appear. Did you ever have that? Like, I was thinking, I had a dream about the whole Bloody Mary thing the other day. Did you have one of those in Chelmsford growing up?
We didn't have one in, I don't think so.
There was always the one kid in school with us who was like, yeah, if you go into the bathroom and, like, turn off the lights and say it, then she'll appear and kill you. I'm like, well, how do you know?
There was one at Bradford. I don't know if there was a mirror thing, but there were ghosts in Academy Hall, supposedly.
Awesome.
And of course, there was the one that you probably know even more about than I do because you were a counselor there. There was the one at scout camp. There was
yes, Juana.
That
still gives me the creeps. Actually,
I just got a little chill just even saying.
Yeah, like there would be nights I'd be walking along one of the trails at twilight because I see very well in low light and it didn't bother me. But I'd be like, "Wow, this is a horror movie I'm walking through." And the graveyard is only about half a mile over there.
Did you know that they... have you seen those History in America books that are all, like, photos? It's basically like a photo book.
And yeah.
It's got they did one on Wetucka recently.
Really?
And I went flipping through it to see if there was anybody that I knew, and Matt Barry is in there. there are a couple other people I think I vaguely recognize, but I was mainly looking for pictures of you or Andy or me.
That's crazy.
none of which I found. But
I found a picture of my troop online from, like, you know, they made every troop sit for the photo at Wataka. I found that online somewhere. But
I still have those somewhere.
Yeah, me too. Wow, that's crazy. I don't know.
Bloody Mary reminds me that I did just finish watching. I'm done with Tudor period movies.
Nice.
Well, I'm not completely done, but I've decided that I'm done.
Moving on to the Stuarts now.
I finished watching the Tudors, which I think I mentioned before.
Uh-huh.
And then I started watching Elizabeth, and then Elizabeth the Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
and of course, the rather corpulent Bloody Mary is in the beginning of Elizabeth.
Not an attractive woman.
No, and what was with the midgets? And what was with the little people?
Yeah. Quirky woman.
Yeah. That was a very... Well, but there was one attached to Elizabeth as well in that movie. Gone in the second movie, I think.
Yeah, there were some early modern fascinations with the little people. You know, it's one of those kind of historical things that you just have to look at and say, oh,
it was right. It really threw me. And so I finished The Golden Age yesterday, and the next movie in my queue, my Netflix queue, was The Other Boleyn Girl, just for the sheer hell of it. I was like, what the hell? You know, I'm sure it's terrible, but I'll watch it. And I just, after Elizabeth The Golden Age, I was like, which was not as, I had heard that it was not a great follow-up.
He didn't like it as much, no.
Yeah, I certainly didn't like it as much, but I thought it had its moments. But I got to the end of it, and I'm kind of like, I'm done. I would like to watch
something. Maybe cool off with Shakespeare in Love or something.
Yeah, I thought about that. I did see that. I was going through my Apple TV and scrolling through the movies yesterday for a follow-up, and I was like, I could do Shakespeare in Love, but yeah.
My Netflix has gotten a little lower brow, actually. Like, thinking of Christmas movies, I have just received Gremlins in the mail, which I always think of as a Christmas movie because, you know, of course, he gets the Mogwai at Christmas. So.
Yeah. Ages since I saw that.
Yeah, me too. I was going on an 80s binge with Netflix. And
So are you able to... Maybe it's just because of when they pick up the mail here, but there's always sort of a 48-hour turnaround. With me,
You know, it's really weird because Julie and Steven have Netflix also, and like the other day, like, they mailed theirs back and I mailed mine back from the same mailbox by the same mailman at the same time, and theirs came back in 48 hours and mine took a week. Why
I've noticed that they started marking certain things as a long delay or whatever. There are a couple things I think that are Christmas oriented that are further down my queue that are marked that way.
I mean, I'm still super happy with them, and I watch a ton of stuff streaming, and that's fine, you know. But
I haven't watched as much streaming recently, mostly because there are so many things that I want to catch up on that are disc only.
I'm always thankful when something is streaming that I don't necessarily want people to know that I got. Like, it's hard to explain why you wanted to see Revenge of the Nerds, you know? Like, you just did, okay?
Yeah.
So if you can avoid that conversation, that's...
Yeah, it's probably better that way.
All right, so I wanted to see Police Academy. What do you mean?
What did possess you to watch Police Academy 3?
You know, when I was, like, 8, Steve Guttenberg, of course, was the funniest guy in the universe.
Yeah, he was pretty funny.
So I was just thinking about it, and I was like, well, is he still funny? Or was it just because I was 8? So I watched Short Circuit, which, you know, holds up, but not very well. It's a surprisingly racist movie. But anyway.
That I can't imagine.
So I was watching that, and I was kind of like, okay. And then... Police Academy 2 came up for some reason, probably because Steve Guttenberg was in both of them, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch it. And yeah, and then I was working on something else, and I just said, well, I'll put 3 on, and yeah, not great.
What's the subtitle of 3? 2 is Citizens on Patrol, right?
Or is that's the fourth one.
Oh, okay.
I think 3 is, I don't even know. The plot of 3 is that Lessard's Academy, at which all of our lovable scamp police people are instructors right now, is going head-to-head with Mauser's Police Academy.
Okay.
Because they've only decided to fund one of them, and so whoever wins the... Every 80s movie comes down to whoever wins this competition will...
Right.
it seems like that's the theme of the whole decade, really. Right.
Whoever builds the quickest nuclear bomb is going to win the competition. I mean, that's the theme of the world, right?
It's kind of strange. So, yeah, so of course then they go head-to-head, and I forget what the title is, but... Yeah.
When he was Gutenberg's only in the first four or the first three? Is he?
He's in four of them.
Is he in four?
Okay. I think he might actually be in the sixth one as well. But dude, I haven't seen that in like 20 years. So,
is that one of the ones that they are like is on the top on the burner to be remade? Do you know?
It is actually. I saw a thing online somewhere where they were thinking about remaking it. They're also apparently remaking Highlander, which you know. I'm one of the few people that defends Highlander because I'm like
I dig Highlander. Like I well, but see, where do you okay?
Is so the
where
acting do you come great? Down
on no. two? Where do you come on?
Oh, I hate it. I hate it with an unholy passion. Not because you know it's zany, but because it goes all Phantom Menace on us. It's
right,
like
it tries to yeah.
Let's explain the origin of the quickening, and let's make it outer space, and let's do this other stuff. Like, no, let's not.
No,
we're doing fine.
Yeah. Well, so am I right in remembering that they sort of ignore that one going forward? And so then I remember, and it's still. I think I've tried to watch it recently and it didn't have nearly the effect on me, but one of the most striking moments of TV and music for me, you know, you've talked about at least on the site somewhere on Brothers in Arms and Miami Vice and things like that,
yeah.
Which I never actually got to experience. I got to experience Brothers
you
in
too,
Arms
fella.
With West Wing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, also a really good use of that particular. Yeah.
But the one that sticks out in my brain is when after Tessa dies on the is it Tess? Tessa?
Tess.
Something?
Yeah.
After she dies on the Highlander TV series and they use Dust in the Wind.
Yeah.
Like that I remember
that was actually I think the last good episode of that show.
I think so because I tried to like get an idea of like what happened after that.
As soon as they made Richie an immortal, I was just like, done. I'm done. I don't care. Done. That guy sucks.
And that was only like the second or third season, right? Yeah. And it went on and on and on. After
seven that. Seasons or something? I don't remember.
So when they're talking about remaking it, I mean, are they trying to stick within the same universe or?
That's my understanding. I mean, I hope so.
I mean, I dig these movie franchises that they've tried to reinvent, right? But here's, like, so Terminator they've now tried to reinvent, both on TV and in the films.
I actually, you know, the TV show was okay at times, but yeah,
I didn't get to see that. I think it is in my queue somewhere to check it out. But and now Highlander they're trying to do, and I wonder whether, like, the... It's easy enough to reboot a comic book franchise when you're doing it when you're doing the comic book movie. So like, it doesn't bother anybody that that Hulk came out and then a few years later, Incredible Hulk came out and paid no attention to that because the source material was from a different a different genre.
Right. Same deal with Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're rebooting, and so I think they're gonna have a real problem with Superman in that regard, in that this next one is not gonna use. Williams score. But anyway, I digress. When you're rebooting a movie franchise, something that's always been just movies like Terminator, like Highlander, I mean, is part of the problem that like we think about all those movies and we expect them all to sort of tie together? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's tricky, right? Like, I mean, as a fan, you want to see that I guess the legacy of the thing that you like is in good hands. So if they made the Highlander movie into like a buddy comedy, then I'd be kind of like, well, no, no. Or if, you know, they said, hey, Tim Burton, how would you like a crack at remaking Star Wars? Like, No. You know, because, I mean, George Lucas can ruin those movies on his own, and God knows he's trying.
Yeah, we don't need Tim.
You know, when they had the limited release of the originals on DVD, was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the unedited, unmonkeyed around with, I had to buy them. And I don't care what it takes, I will maintain a working DVD player for the rest of my life. I'm sorry, but Han shot first, damn it. And, you know, it's funny, I saw a spoof online of, like, how to talk to your kids about Star Wars. And, you know, you had all these parents, like, sitting around there. Like, what do we tell them about Jar Jar Binks? I mean, how do we handle that? And, yeah. Yeah, actually, in the spoof, it was funny because there were opinions that were clearly mine. Like, not in my house, not ever. I don't care what your friends do at school. There are three movies.
All right.
That's it.
I
read a really disturbing rumor about that, actually, that he...
Oh, that they were thinking about doing the future three?
Please don't. Please just don't. The only thing that was good about what I read was they were saying, well, if they did it, it would be like 1,000 years in the future and have nothing to do with the Skywalker family. Like, okay. All right. Maybe.
Yeah, but the whole movie
franchise... If you let other people do it.
Yeah. The whole movie franchise is about the Skywalker family, I think.
Yeah, but that universe is cool. You know, like, you could go other directions. That was the thing, too, about the Highlander movie, actually, in a kind of weird way, is that... Okay, so you establish that this dude was born in medieval Scotland, okay? And then he lives to the 1980s in New York and presumably beyond, because he kills everyone.
Yeah.
That's a huge chunk of his life. And then they make the next movie about outer space and other stuff. And you're like, well, why not just go tell a really compelling story from his life?
Right.
Which is what the TV show tried to do. And yeah. I think their best episodes were the ones where they focused on, you know, pivotal moments, as he was.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the great thing about the Eternal Warrior comic book series. Was that was a dude who was very long lived. I forget why, but he.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You would see him in different periods of history, and that was.
Yeah,
so that actually cool. In my comic script plays in a little bit because I've got a guy who's very, very long lived, and I will probably get it will probably be very creative interpretations of history because enough of the history.
Yeah, it's comics. But,
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a tribute to 90s comics, the whole thing. So, you know,
cool.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, one of the problems with Highlander, not a problem because the original film stands up, as a film by itself, right?
Yeah.
Is that he wins the prize at the end of the first movie. And then they have to invent what, if they had done what you're suggesting, I think it would have made for a great film, but it would have been a great prequel, you know, and I guess prequels are kind of selling now. So,
true.
But in the 80s and the 90s, you know, you were trying to up the game and continue the story, right? So they had to invent Mario Van Peebles coming out of a cave. You know, the TV show did it all right, right? I mean, because the TV show was even kind of, it was vague enough that maybe this all happened before he.
I think they just chose to kind of ignore the fact that someone had won the prize. Like, they just kind of edited that bit of the story. Because Connor shows up, like, once or twice. Not that actor, but there's references or, like, flashbacks or whatever. And they did make a later Highlander movie, which was, you know, the guy from the TV show and. You know,
I know. I never saw that.
Lambert. And I think in that one they finally finish it, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
So yeah, like in, I think it was pretty smart. They just said, okay, well, this is still ongoing. There could be immortals showing up that are no good. There could be good ones, but you know, there's some mystery. Whereas
it's a very interesting series, and I you know, if they do it well, I'd be into it.
Maybe I don't know. I'm a little nervous. I wonder why Hollywood just can't make original movies right now, to be honest.
You know, there is that too. And I think it's really it's the economy of just like they want they're all owned by these huge, super huge corporations and they need bankable whatever. And so I think even before we started recording, I told you I had pictures of Red State, Kevin Smith's next film, up on my screen.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, like the way that he has gone about this in terms of filming it outside of the system and then going and finding a distributor afterwards, the sort of old indie model is maybe the best way, that best chance that we have for original ideas. Have you seen, and of course, Red State is a horror movie and probably, and is fairly low budget, but have you seen District 9?
I haven't yet. It is actually in my Netflix queue.
It's mine too. But that whole thing was, that was one of those ones. I mean, that's kind of a great hope, isn't it? I mean, I, from what I understand about it, is that it was a kind of low budget sci-fi, original sci-fi idea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's possible, but just like we're not going to get really great music out of the sort of big labels in
yeah, it's true. I saw that the Grammy Awards were announced this week, and of course, you know, Eminem riding high because, I don't know, he's relevant or something.
He's not relevant.
Yeah. You know, and saw something about the Super Bowl halftime show. I forget which band they said was going to do it, but they noted it was because the Black Eyed Peas were unavailable. Like, really? This again? I mean, honestly, does America just have four bands? Let me guess, it's going to be Taylor Swift because...
Well, you know, if it was Taylor Swift, that would... Well, Taylor Swift, I'm sure, will play some opening ceremony or something, because God forbid they should ever have another woman. God forbid they should ever have somebody else with breasts on the Super Bowl halftime show.
You know, unless
that will never, ever happen again.
But, I mean... Yeah, just... Oh, my God. Yeah, actually, that football on Thanksgiving, it was really funny because they showed the Target ad for Keith Urban. And he, like, you know, does his little shtick where he's walking and shaking hands with people, and he goes up on the stage. And then they cut back to the program, and that's exactly what he was doing. He was, like, walking through a tunnel and shaking hands with people and going up the stage and somebody handed him a guitar. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I walked out of the room because, I don't need that. But, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, but, you know, it's...
I have some hope. If anything, the last... election and the soon to be catastrophic fallout from it, usually that spells well for, you know, good things for music.
And good things from creative endeavors in general, you know.
So we'll
because creative
see.
People have something to be pissed off about now.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, look at REM's last album. It was amazing. And what happened? You know, second Bush. So we'll hope for the best. Actually, my favorite moment of that. My favorite moment of that. I went to see them in Dublin when they were doing the quote working rehearsals for Accelerate, and it was amazing. And Michael Stipe had this laptop, and I'm sure you can see pictures of it online. And he had a big bumper sticker on the back that said "Impeach," and so he was kind of just doing question and answer all night in between songs. And somebody was like, "What does that mean?" And he's like, "What does it mean? Are you fucking kidding me?" And it's just one of those great moments.
You posted something about the new next REM album.
Yeah,
right? Did we talk about that last time?
No, a little bit. We mentioned that Peaches was going to be on it. Just still confusing.
are we going to get Shiny Happy People in Radio Song, or are we going to get, you know, Automatic for the People?
Well, they said they were continuing in a similar vein, but they felt more comfortable bringing other styles into what they were doing, so that there are some slower tempo things as well. I mean, Peter Buck, when you read an interview with Peter, because there's a link to one with Peter and a link to one with Mike Mills, and Mike is always really positive. Like, we did a lot of good work, and we came up with some good songs, and I'm really happy with them. Peter is always like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, we fought a lot, and I'm not real happy about it, but that's what it is. Like, he does that with every album, even the ones he likes, and you're just like, all right, I'm psyched to hear it. They've posted some, like, little video clips from the studio, and they're short and kind of confusing, and, like, there's a brass choir, or there's another choir, or there's, you know, like, a bunch of people making serious noise, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think it'll be a reversal. I don't think we're going to end up with Reveal or Around the Sun again, which, you know, have their moments, but for me are just kind of meh.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting. But we'll all find out, I guess, in March.
Cool. Very neat.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think this is a long goat.
Yeah, it's just fairly long, but you know, I think good, you know, good and long. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
we
maybe
got to everything we were going to talk about, and we ended with REM. You know?
That's right, not Lost, but REM.
But REM. We will someday talk about Lost, right?
Yeah, it was all Vincent's dream.
All the dogs were dead.
It was the polar bears the whole time. All right.
It was something in the Dharma peanut butter.
That's right. They've all actually just been high.
Yes.
All right. We should probably wrap it up.
I think so.
And I guess as payback, we have forgotten to mention the podcast that we were going to mention.
Yes. Yes. There's a new podcast out there that was apparently inspired by our podcast, but until they tell the world that they were inspired by us, we're not going to mention them.
That's right. Take that. Now the two people who listen, including one of the people who makes that podcast, are going to be confused. Excepting that one guy who makes that podcast.
Right.
Take that.
Take that.
All right. Take it easy, Chris.
Take it easy, John.